Everyone is Irish on St. Paddy's Day, a Christian feast day providing a 24-hour respite from Lenten restrictions on eating and drinking alcohol. We've set the table with a pitcher of green beer and a platter of corned beef and cabbage for our guest, Rutgers Camden Assistant Professor of English, Aaron Hostetter. Thanks for joining us on Newsworks tonight.
Thank you, Dave.
You're turning up your nose. I can understand maybe the green beer isn't for you,
but the green beer,
what's wrong with corned beef and cabbage?
Oh, nothing at all. That's like my favorite dish. I've been thinking about this for a couple of weeks now and preparing it in my mind.
But if we look a little closer, it's really not what we can link back to Ireland.
Not ancient Ireland. It's very much an Irish-American phenomenon, especially that's the growing popularity.
Now, in preparing to meet you, I did come across something called bacon and cabbage, which does seem much more indigenous.
Yes, that's definitely indigenous. Traditional 18th century, 19th century Irish dish would be bacon, and because people ate pig mostly in Ireland.
How did bacon turn into corned beef?
Well, it's hard to say for sure. Ireland has long been associated with corned beef. They have produced corned beef. They produced corned beef en masse for the English Empire in the 18th and 19th century, and exported all this corned beef. It's mostly for the English Navy, but also to French colonies. So you could say Irish corned beef was an engine, a food that powered the colonial enterprise because the English Navy dominated the world in the 18th and 19th century. When the potato famine happened, you know, a million Irish people moved to the United States, where beef is much more commonly eaten. There's quite a thriving meat packing industry in the United States, which, you know, corned beef to preserve it in an age before refrigeration occurred. So these immigrants of all ilks, you know, Jewish Americans, Polish Americans, Irish Americans, sort of come together and sort of swap food, and they're in this amalgamation. Corned beef sort of gets re-injected into Irish American cuisine.
A literal interpretation of melting pot.
Yes, yes, absolutely.
Interesting in the cross-pollination sense of it, though, that we associate Ireland and, as you mentioned, the potato famine, but that potato came from the Americas.
Yes, it did. It's native to Peru and was imported into Europe in the 16th century and became, you know, started as a rich person's food because it was exotic and different, and soon people realized its demographic potential, and as because it grows, it delivers more calories than wheat, but in a smaller area, and it's much easier to produce.
Your focus is on the food history of the British Isles. How far back does it go?
My research is mostly on medieval England and a little bit of medieval France and Anglo-Saxon England.
Neither green beer nor corned beef and
right,
cabbage
right.
part of the staples.
But
there.
A lot of cabbage. A lot of cabbage eaten in the Middle Ages.
Cabbage and what else?
Mostly pork, preserved, you know, something like bacon or a salted pork. A lot of fish, because there were fish days in Catholic England. You had to eat on a fast day. You could only eat fish or fish products or food that was considered to have come from the water. And so people ate a lot of fish, probably three or four times a week. And fish was actually so popular that when the Protestant Reformation occurred, the government actually said, even though the feast days are no longer in effect because we're no longer Catholics, you should continue to eat fish because it's for the health of the nation, right, for the fishing industry.
Fish really is brain food.
Yes.
Of course, you mentioned salting, but bereft of refrigeration and freezing, I presume there were periods in the winter where food was relatively scarce. Can you generalize and say, though, whether the diet back then was more or less healthy than it is now?
Well, people ate a lot less meat. So if, according to some people, it would be healthier, right? Depending on who you believe, you know, who your nutritionist is. People ate a lot. Peasants, especially the lower classes, ate much, much, much less meat. Mostly bread, gruel, porridge, you know, oats, barley.
Where would they derive their protein from?
Dairy mostly, milk. They would keep a cow. You would keep a cow on a farm just for milk.
And another reason why corned beef wouldn't be the preferred meat dish.
Yes, absolutely, absolutely. So you would also use the cow for labor, so plowing and things like that. And that's how medieval Ireland mostly worked. The cow is a potent symbol of wealth. Throughout most of, you know, from Asia on westward, there's a medieval epic called the Cattle Raid of Cooley, which involves two armies fighting over bulls, and then they have this enormous horrifyingly bloody battle over these two large cows, and sort of shows what the political significance of the cow is.
As you look into the politics and the social values associated with foods and cuisines, it seems to run across cultures. I looked up dishes that most of our listeners would be familiar with, whether it's ratatouille or polenta, scrapple, sausage, head cheese, mulligan stew. These are all, for lack of a better term, what you might call peasant food.
Yeah, peasant food as a term is a pejorative term that begins in sort of the 19th or early 20th century by American nutritionists who set it up as an opposition to haute cuisine, right? French high-class cooking, status cooking, and then also sort of plain English bourgeois fare, right? Sort of the hearty English dish, right? Fish and chips, roast beef, you know, Irish stew, things like that. The shepherd's pie, I should say. Peasants' food is sort of these nutritionists turning up their noses at the ethnic cuisine of Italians and Polish people and Spanish and Germans and Irish.
So it's kind of a class hierarchy then.
It's a very, very rigid class hierarchy. The haute cuisine is very rarefied. A lot of elaborate presentation, elaborate reductions and preparations to sort of bolster or emphasize the taste of a single flavor of a dish and, you know, sort of reduce it into its smallest portion possible, you know, most rarefied sort of portion. And peasant food sort of sits as a kind of hearty, starchy, plenty, coarse in the sense that it's cooked, tends to be cooked in a simple way, boiling and roasting. Right. So not the sort of double glazing and baking and things like that. Things you can do over an open fire.
Professor, let's fast forward to 2014. Take a gander at what you might consider to be American peasant cuisine.
American peasant cuisine. You know, what it's not is there seems to be a similar distinction made in grocery stores and things like that now, where there's people take on sort of political identity, economic identity from where they shop. Right. And so, you know, you to eat organic, right, and spend a lot of money on organic food tends to be a signifier of sort of middle class comfort and upper class comfort. People want to eat like that.
What are you going to be dining on St. Patrick's Day?
Well, I usually put together a corned beef with cabbage and potatoes, maybe some different root vegetables, lots of spices, coriander, allspice, pepper in a big pot. Let that simmer. Have a Guinness or two. It's
they don't make green Guinness.
I know they don't. It's probably for the best.
Professor, thanks so much for joining us on NewsWorks tonight. That's Rutgers Camden Assistant Professor of English, Aaron Hostetter.